This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Hey, everyone. It's Estelle Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century. And that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast. Your This Place is crowding up of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. This is Future John. This is John from a few days after we recorded, just diving in because it seems worth noting that a day or two after we recorded this, Kylie did in fact play at a gay party. She played at Horse Meat Disco. She played Padam Padam. I don't know if we incepted that. I don't know if we spoke it into existence, but that did happen. So we want to properly honor and document that and acknowledge that it happened. So there it is. Now back to previous John. Do you know what we were just listening to? It might be a litmus test. Might be a litmus test. That is Padam Padam by Kylie Minogue. Definitely one of the biggest songs of this summer. But maybe, perhaps, I don't know, maybe I feel like this is an opportunity to talk about a TikTok I saw recently from user I'm Justin Randall. And Justin says, this song has literally shifted the gay community into an alternate timeline. But we're going to make it to the end of the summer before a single straight guy has even heard it. Well, not the end of the summer, I guess is what I have to say. But about halfway through, here we are. We're talking about Padam Padam. We're talking about Kylie Minogue. We're talking about the role that this song is playing this summer. We're talking about it with Jason P. Frank, news writer at Vulture, second time on Popcast. Jason, bienvenue.
Padam, John.
Padam, this conversation about to be extremely padam is what I feel.
Extremely padam. Well.
Okay, let's start. First of all, this song is huge. Where is this song huge? It's obviously huge on Popcast because here we are.
Of course,
a given, a known thing. Where is this song huge right now? What's cracking with this song?
In terms of geography, this song is huge in the UK. It's huge in Australia. And then it's huge among people who are celebrating a very happy Pride Month.
Extremely happy Pride. Happy Pride to everybody listening.
Thank you so much.
And everybody participating in Popcast today. So, Padam, a gay club anthem right now.
Yes. Also just a gay anthem in general. You don't even have to go to the club. I am hearing it in the streets. I am being greeted with the word Padam. I was at the Los Culturistas Culture Awards. It played 8 to 12 times there. It's the moment. It is the only thing gay people are listening to, and it is a thing that straight people probably haven't heard of.
My path into it was through TikTok and through memes, and then like reverse engineering from the memes, basically, and figuring that out. But can we talk a little bit about, is there an origin point? Is there, whether it's an individual TikTok or a DJ or a club, maybe really what I'm asking, Jason, do you remember life before Padam?
I remember it, and what a less red world it was.
Truly, right? Yeah, it was like from black and white to color.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that anything Kylie releases will be listened to by the queer community at this point. I whether or not it becomes this large, which most of the time it doesn't, I think she has enough fans that it's going to get a cursory listen, and then if it goes off, it'll become a thing. And I think there was a hive mind thing that said, this is number one, good, number two, funny, and number three, easy and flexible to play with in a meme format that worked and took off almost immediately among gay people that I saw. I feel like the origin point for it, to me, was on Twitter.
Oh, okay. Tell me about that a little bit.
That's largely because Kylie's gay fans tend to be a little bit older in the gay community. I mean, she's been around a while, John. Like, I wouldn't say...
It's no shots. It's just facts. These are just factual. It's factual.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wouldn't say the twinks are, like, immediately listening to Kylie. They're open. They're open to Kylie. But no twink said, oh, Kylie has a new song. I must listen to it. And I think that Twitter tends to support a generation of queer people who do remember 9/11 more than TikTok does.
I want to say this is the second episode of Popcast in a row where generational divides have become really important. The Joni Mitchell episode, you will not believe the emails I got of the Joni Mitchell episode from readers who thought I was deemed insufficiently reverent of Joni Mitchell. So in this sort of like parallel, I'm the younger community being like, maybe I would listen to Kylie. Maybe, but it's not necessary, as opposed to the Twitter age community who is like, that's my girl. So I'm just letting people know that like my own positionality is flexible depending on the subject matter. So it's just worth remembering. We're all a product of our experiences. That's just I want people to keep that in mind. So Twitter, so it became a conversation point, not necessarily a meme point, but like a conversation point on Twitter.
I think a meme point as well. You can't really talk about Padam Padam without it being a little bit funny. I think there's just something inherently funny about a song being called Padam Padam, unless it's the Edith Piaf one.
Which I only learned about 17 minutes ago. So, yeah.
Kylie Minogue and Edith Piaf in direct conversation here with the song title names.
As the Lord intended.
As the Lord intended.
And do we know, has Kylie talked about, did Kylie take directly lifted from that?
Yeah. As far as I know, it was a reference, or at least someone on her team did it. Yeah, I don't think multiple minds came up with Padam Padam sounds like the beat of a heart. Like, I don't think that's, oh, we arrived at this independently. I don't know how this happened.
We should listen to the, let's just, for humor value, if nothing else, let's listen to Edith Piaf sing Padam Padam. And hopefully, has any enterprising AI producer put Kylie's Padam Padam in the voice of Edith Piaf? Or vice versa.
Oh my God,
versa.
Not that I've heard, but love
now's
to hear
your
it.
Chance. Now's the prompt. Yeah. If you are an enterprising producer, feel free to make that audio and I'll share it on a later podcast. Anyway, here's Edith Piaf doing Edith Piaf's Padam Padam.
Il parle toujours avant moi et sa voix couvre ma voix. Padam, padam, padam.
Okay, so the Kylie song, this is about going out, meeting someone at a club, getting excited, wanting to see what's going on under the t-shirt. A classic nightlife come on. Kylie has been good for an anthem like this, kind of like once every 5 years, maybe more frequently in an earlier era, but is occasionally good for songs like this, yeah?
It depends on who you are, how frequently the songs are popping up. Like if you're a radio DJ, it's every 20 years. Like in the U.S., sorry, in the U.S.
In the U.S., sorry.
No shots ever to Australian and U.K. fans of Kylie.
American privilege here. We're exerting American privilege here. Forgive us.
I think it depends on who you are. I think to some people it's every 3 years, to some people it's every 10, to some people it's every 20. But she is consistently, no matter who you are, making bops about going out.
Tell me a little bit about the meme ecosystem on this song. I feel like you mentioned Twitter. I feel like on TikTok, it's incredibly heavy. What are we seeing a little bit in how this song is being discussed? Not simply listened to, but being talked about.
Kylie works really, really well with this. She's a natural for this position for U.S. queers. She feels like our little secret, right? Like she is incredibly popular. She has an incredibly deep discography. But because she has not made a blip, she's made two blips in the American Great American Songbook.
Like true American pop hits. Yeah.
Yeah. Like she had 37 of those in the UK. And if you like that kind of pop music, she has such a deep discography that she feels like a secret that you have. And I think Padam Padam is just expanding on that legacy. It feels like the excitement around this song is due to it being an in-community situation. Like no one is listening to it. You're not going to hear it at a frat party. You're going to hear it 8 times at a pride party. And I think that level of intensity serves as a great meme format because memes work really well in small communities.
Absolutely.
And I also think the reason it became a meme in the first place, I think, has to do with a little bit of its like natural campiness while still looking straight ahead. I think the phrase Padam Padam is inherently funny. And that's why it became a meme to begin with. And then once it became a big meme, it took on the larger narrative of Kylie Minogue overall.
It had this kind of like representational value. And also to your point about inclusion, exclusion, or who's in the know and who's not in the know, there's that one very good TikTok. It's a man on the street interview. It's in West Hollywood. The conceit, it only kind of makes sense if you're assuming everybody in it is gay. The interviewer says to the interview subject, "What's some gay slang, new gay slang that you're into?" The interview subject says,
"Padam."
"Padam?
Do you know what Padam is?"
"No, what is it?"
"Kylie Minogue, duh."
"What does it mean?"
"Are you kidding me?"
Padam, the interviewer does not know what that is. Shocking. They go back and forth, talk about what Padam means, what it means this summer. And then the interviewer, still kind of like a little bit like, "I can't be the only one who doesn't know," pulls a random guy and says, "Do you know what Padam is?"
Excuse me. "Do you know Padam?"
"Kylie Minogue."
Thereby underscoring the fact the interviewer is the only one who's out of the loop. I think that was actually the first meme that I saw, or the first TikTok that I saw on the subject.
If you see that TikTok, you have to know what Padam is. If you're not listening to Padam and you that, then it's, oh, like I'm out of something. Like this has 250,000 likes and they're all from gay people who are like, "This is embarrassing and I don't know what this is." It's going to increase the popularity of the song. I think that being the basis for the meme makes it feel like you have to like it. You have to be in on it because otherwise you're behind. And then on Twitter, now you're getting people being like, oh, your Padam joke is really funny. We're over it now. And it's like some people have literally never heard the song in their entire life. Mm-hmm. That's how outsized the proportions of Padam conversations are in one place versus another.
Do you think there's any version of the arc of what's going to happen with Padam where it becomes kind of a locomotion, or it becomes a kind of can't get you out of my head, which are the two, to your point earlier, Kylie Minogue crossover, American crossover pop moments?
Yeah, and also it's worth noting they hit like number 3 and number 7. Now Kylie people talk about them as if they were like these huge all-dominating songs in America, and they weren't really. They were still just like kind of random hits.
If the idea of a meme song existed when Locomotion was out, that would have been a meme song, but that was pre-memes. Let's listen, first of all, let's listen to a touch of Can't Get You Out of My Head. I'll spare y'all from listening to Locomotion. So Can't Get You Out of My Head, if anything, was like a little too smart to be a world killer of a song. It's a little too smooth. It's a little too thoughtfully produced. It's sometimes I feel like we talk about songs as, is it, how dumb is it? We talked about this with the Dare a few weeks ago, where I was just, the Dare should be like 20% dumber. And it would actually be better if it was dumber. I feel like this could have been dumber and it would have been bigger if it was dumber.
I will take umbrage with the world killer thing, though, because it was a world killer. It wasn't an America killer. It went to number one everywhere else in the world, right? Like, there's something about Kylie that just doesn't hit in America, and that only makes her stronger in certain communities. But it also means that the other night when she was performing, quote-unquote, in New York, it was in Long Island with Deborah Cox as her opening act.
Is that true?
Yes. Yes, yes. She performed in Long Island.
Like where, like Hampton's Long Island, or like
I don't know
like
where it
Central
was. Here,
Long
I can,
Island.
I can,
like
here,
Huntington.
Let me look up.
Was it like Kylie Minogue in Huntington? Because that's if
it
so.
It was like, I know people who went to the show and they were like, it was primarily Long Island moms. Like they didn't, like nobody even said Happy Pride because most of the audience didn't like acknowledge that.
Come on. And was there not like a complimentary show the same night at a gay club in New York? There was not
no,
like a...
No, no, no. This was the only show Kylie Minogue played that
you
night.
Are, other you are than, shitting me.
Yes, yes, yes. And then here's the thing is that that was the same night I was at the Los Culturistas Culture Awards at Lincoln Center where 3,500 gay people sang along as Patty Harrison pretending to be Kylie Minogue did... Padam Padam and pretended like her appendix burst twice throughout the song. That's the version of Padam that exists.
How does Kylie's PR person not know to bring to rescue Kylie from the Long Island moms? No shots of the Long Island moms. I respect them.
Yeah.
I honor them.
It was at the Jones Beach Theater. I just looked it up.
Oh, down. Okay. And that was a headlining Kylie show.
Headlining Kylie show with Deborah Cox as her opening act. And then Daya, Christine W., and Ali Brooke were
shout
also
out
there. But
I think I did the first Daya interview. I think so.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Put it on my tombstone.
Yeah. But it was like literally I asked the 30-year-old queers that I'm friends with to report back and they were like, no one even said Happy Pride.
This is baffling, dog.
Yeah.
But let me ask this question. Is Kylie somehow trying to have it both ways, which is like playing into it while also not embracing it?
She has to know that this is her U.S. audience. There's no reason for her not to play into it. I don't know why she wouldn't be, and I don't know why she played that set. I don't have an answer for you because it always seems like she's thrilled to have a queer fan base. She's never said anything to the alternative. But I feel like she has an uncomfortability in the U.S. I don't think she
fully... You
think
it's just specific to the geographic region, not to the gay community embrace?
I don't think she necessarily knows how to be like a Charlie XCX figure, right? Like where Charlie is like, hi, gay boys, and signing poppers, because that's who she is everywhere in the world. When you're a world killer in Australia, when you're a world killer in the UK, she has a number one, she has a top 10 hit in 5 decades in a row in the UK. She is Kylie there. Here, Kylie is Kylie Jenner.
That's interesting. So in essence, what you're saying is, it might be challenging at this stage of her career and age. I don't know how old Kylie Minogue is, but
she's like in her 50s.
Yeah, 50-something would be my guess. She's not really in a place where she's calibrating her celebrity to the room. She's either up here or she's not in dialogue. Like she's only one version of herself is what you're saying.
It's like, would Madonna go to a country where she had never had a number one hit? Like, that's the question, because that's who she is elsewhere. Would she go perform for her, like, group of fans in this made-up country where no one really knows who Madonna is? What's the point of that for her?
And that's actually totally fair. And I think when you're thinking about artists who are super successful, but in their 20s or 30s, there's still this idea that I can go out and conquer a new territory. So even if I'm like a superstar here, I might have to start at the ground in America. I might have to start at a lower level. And we're, like when I went to see Louis Capaldi at Radio City, and he was like, LOL, guys, like this is the smallest show that I've played in.
Don't like bring up Louis Capaldi on Pridecast. Don't
wow.
do it to me. That's really...
damn, I apologize. I apologize. I'm just trying to illustrate a point, Jason.
Yeah,
to illustrate a point.
I'm sorry, I just got a little bit straighter and it was really uncomfortable for me.
Wow. I will make this episode of Popcast available in two edits, one with the Louis Capaldi reference and one without the Louis Capaldi reference for those who can't quite take it during Pride Month.
Yeah, so, that would be, I think that's actually allyship and thank you for that.
I appreciate that. So you think Kylie is, in essence, too far down the road of being Kylie to accept a smaller, more niche or cloistered version of her celebrity in America?
I mean, I guess I'm saying that, except she did perform in Long Island. Like, if she wasn't performing at all, that would be my read. I don't understand why she was in the vicinity of New York and not performing in New York. Like, I don't fully understand that. Yeah.
I'm actually shocked to hear that, because if you would have told me that Kylie Minogue was performing in the New York City area during Pride Month. If you had said that to me a week ago, I would have been like, obviously he's going to do 3-4 events during nightclub events or whatever, the award show. You're like, obviously that's where she's showing up. But
like half of
not.
New York already knows her Padam Padam choreography, or half of gay New York. Like they know it. Like they like might as well. I know gay people who tracked all the way out to Long Island for on Pride Month for Kylie. Like you have this many fans and you're not performing here. I don't understand it.
Really baffling. The managers and the publicists need to check in with us because obviously they're not doing. You always need to check in. It feels very KTU coded. It's very 103.5 coded. It's very like.
Well, it was produced by KTU.
It was the show?
Yeah.
There you go. So there you go. It's just dance music and dance music in that, in a KTU context. And if you're not in New York, WKTU is essentially like a pop dance radio station. But what that station effectively does is disentangles dance culture from queer culture, from black culture, et cetera, and turns it into one nebulous whole. And I think, because of that, that's why you have Kylie Minogue and Deborah Cox on the same bill when I don't think organically those two artists are on the same bill, if we're just being honest. No shots to Deborah Cox, who I like a lot, but I just don't think that that's the same, the same target audience. Okay, what's the future of Padam?
I mean, it lives forever in the gay context. I think that that's true.
It's permanent slang now. You think it's permanent slang?
Permanent slang? No. Padam, the phrase, is gone within a year maximum. Like I'm not seeing any more Grindr profiles with the word Padam as the name in 6 months.
Okay.
That's not happening. But I think the song lasts on Pride playlists for the end of time. Like people's Pride playlists still include Madonna tracks. They still include Crystal Waters. Like the Pride ecosystem is similar to a Christmas ecosystem where if you get in the canon, you don't leave the canon.
So it's canon.
Yeah, absolutely. It's canon.
Is there a version of it where it ends up on, we talk about it being KT, that show being KTU coded. Is there a version of the Padam arc that somehow gets to the Z100s of the world?
I don't think so. I think the song is good, but if you remove it from people who have any understanding of the meme value of it or like the comedy of it or the camp of it, I think it has a harder time. If you aren't naturally fluent in camp, then I don't think the song makes a lot of sense to you as something to become obsessed with. And if Supernova from 2020 didn't become big, and Supernova is like the best Kylie track of the past 10 years, I think.
Should we listen to Supernova?
Fuck yeah, listen. I'm sorry. Yeah, we should listen.
Fuck yeah.
Yes, we should listen to Supernova by Kylie Minogue. I think it's a really great song.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at the New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
Even Supernova lives on Drag Race.
Right. Not anywhere beyond that.
Yeah.
Okay. This question verges on rude, I would say.
Yeah, go for it.
Not rude to you, but okay. Just in...
Be a little bitchy, John. It's Pride.
Thank you. Thank you. That's I hope that plays to my natural strengths, is I think what I'll say.
Yeah, he made a face that was slightly uncomfortable, and so he is still an ally, just so you guys know.
That's very kind. Thank you. If Dua Lipa covered Padam Padam, is that a Z100 record?
Yeah, because Dua Lipa has momentum. I don't think it's as good.
No, I'm not. No. I know it's not as good. No. I know it's not as good. But that's not what I asked.
I think it could be. I think it would just feel very unnatural in her mouth, the words Padam Padam. I don't think it would feel right being sung by her. Like, it would just be like, what are you aiming for here? Kylie has a sense of like fun and flirtiness and like a wink in her voice that she's able to pull off, and Dua Lipa doesn't have that. I think what you're asking though is if an artist covered it who has momentum, who America understands and is legible to America, covered it, would that song be a hit? And I think the answer is that no such artist exists, and so no, because there's a reason that there's no artist that exists like that in America.
Wait, what's the reason that no artist?
No artist is able to pull off Padam Padam in America, and so
Charlie? Not that Charlie would make it a Billboard hit necessarily, but I agree there's not loads of options to choose from. But we are in a pop moment, quote unquote, the last few years. It's very disco informed. And you can come at that through the Dua Lipa side. You can come at that through the Doja Cat side. Is there a Kylie Padam Doja remix?
Yeah, that's the most natural thing. But it also feels unnatural to anyone who listens to it where Kylie is not bigger than Doja to you or more iconic. That would be weird, I think, like unbalanced in America. But I do think Doja, you're right to point to, has like a sense of humor about herself.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I would say if Kim Petras is able to pull off being a star, that would work. Although this album is so humorless that it's embarrassing. Sorry, that album is...
No, it's
awful.
Okay. It's fine. This is Kim Petras probably listening right now.
Hi, Kim. I would love it if you released a better album. The song Sex Talk on the new album is great. And Uh-Oh, I think is great. And then the rest of it is Ava Max.
Come for the Padam conversation. Stay for the Ava Max slander.
Yeah, it's Pridecast. It's Pridecast.
It's totally fine.
Anyway.
You are metaphorically throwing a cell phone at Ava Max on stage.
I would never. How dare you? And I wouldn't slap. No, Bebe Rexha was the phone. And Ava Max is the slap.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Metaphorically.
Oh, yeah. And I'll throw one at Rita Ora, too. Anyway.
Big facts. Okay, sidebar.
Anyway.
Rita, yeah. Sidebar. Just Bebe, Ava, Rita. 1, 2, 3.
Okay, I think I'm going to do it with camp in mind.
Yeah, that's fine. No, you're the camp way.
Do you know what Who Weekly is? Have you heard of that podcast?
Oh, my God. Yes, I know Who Weekly is.
Okay, anyway.
Jesus, Jason.
I don't know.
Oh, my Christ.
But all right. the fact that she is like the queen of the Who's really speaks to the fact that she is the queen of that three as well. Because she is the most like iconically that. And that's what I enjoy about her. I'd say Ava Max next because I think the songs are better. And I think she has a little more personality, even if it is just
photocopied
from Gaga. And then BB last because none of the albums, there's nothing. Like, there's nothing there, and the songs are bad.
What's hilarious is my ranking is literally the inversion of your ranking.
Whoa.
And almost for, I would say almost for the same set of reasons, just I'm privileging. Like, to me, the kind of, like, nothingness that you're finding in Rita Ora, I am finding that in BB. And I am at peace with that. Like, the character of Bebe Rexha to me is much funnier and much more grippable than the music. Ava Max, I agree. And, we're doing like Gaga Monkey, but it's not terrible. But there's also not a lot of personality attached to it. And Rita Ora, in my mind, has had 10 years to or 15 years to like make a impression of some kind and has like systematically not, at least in this country, not done so. And so I feel you. It's just funny that I see it the other way.
It is also funny that Bebe Rexha has made an impression in so many ways through so many songs and yet also no impression at all. That is very impressive and funny.
And again, worth celebrating. Shout out also Bebe Rexha from Staten Island. Like real, real big local girl energy. We stand a local girl. So Kylie, we've done enough on Kylie. But
sure, yes.
Let's talk a little bit about canon. Why do songs like Padam end up canon? How much of it has to do with the song? How much it has to do with a particular embrace by tastemakers in the community? How much of it has to do with camp? How much of it has to do with Kylie's a huge celebrity who gave us this thing? What is the thing that actually takes a song? Because you mentioned this other Kylie song from a couple years ago. You said it's much better, and it's not canon. What is the thing that makes it canon?
I can't give you exact percentages on any of those things, but they are all informing what it is, right? Like, I think you want something that is ultimately going to make people have the most fun possible when you put it on. And whether or not that's because of camp value, like that can add to the fun, or I love this artist can add to the fun. I think that there is an amount that you want a ridiculousness and over-the-topness and excess to the song. And that's where Padam Padam really excels. I think the phrase Padam Padam is just inherently excessive. Like, there's no reason for it to be in existence. It is onomatopoeia. It centers a song around just a sound that doesn't mean anything. And that's fun. That's funny. Like, there's something excessive. There's something ridiculous about it. And I think you want that ridiculousness to be present in some way in that song, because it feels like, generally, when you have that, the gay community feels an ownership over feminine ridiculousness, right? Like, that is something that the queer community responds well to, and specifically responds well to, versus other communities. Like straight people, maybe it's not that they don't sometimes like a ridiculous thing, but they don't have those interpretive abilities built into their community, right? Like, you don't have the ability to
yeah, go off. Go
yeah,
off.
You don't, they, like you, the royal you, speaking to all straighties now, don't have the ability to interpret when something is camp and when something is what does the fox say. What does the fox say isn't camp. It's just over the top. And I think there's an amount that an understanding of the difference between those two things makes one category feel like ours.
From an intentionality perspective, like, you think people in her camp, whether her herself, no pun intended, her herself or people who she works with, are like, this is going to go. That's what this is for. This is for that community. They're going to get it. You think that's happening?
I don't think that was intentional, and I think that the song would be worse if it was. I think a lot of the time when intentionality gets read, gets interpreted, it makes for a worse Pride song. You hear Born This Way, you hear Express Yourself played, but people are a lot more excited for other Gaga, other Madonna songs, because they don't have that, I am now speaking to you community aspect to them, which I think can be cringe.
Gaga particularly has limbed this kind of, I'm doing it very deliberately, I'm not doing it all deliberately, but it's going in that direction. And you're saying that the songs that are more pointed narratively are, in your mind, the less successful ones.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Born This Way is like the least fun song on Born This Way. I just don't think those, we are now talking to you, queers, we love you, is fun to revel in the same way as another song might be, that feels maybe co-opted or plucked out by the queer community. Like, the fact that Padam Padam was selected by queer people is part of the fun of Padam Padam. It's not that Kylie wrote a song and said, happy Pride, here's Padam, which, I mean, releasing it on May 31st, she basically did. But I do think the fact that it was picked from a crowd, and I think that's why Kylie generally has a following, specifically in the queer community in the US, is that there was something that was interpreted in her music, and the fact that it was selected makes it more queer.
To your point earlier, that Kylie is not a world-killing A-lister in America leaves a lot of interpretive space the songs are not being forced from the top down, like they're existing and meaning can be inscribed upon them. Where often with like a conventional, like a Dua Lipa level pop song, it's hard to inscribe meaning onto something that's eating up all the oxygen in the room.
And when Future Nostalgia came out, I think there was a lot of that. And now I don't hear levitating as often in like gay clubs. Like it's like levitating was more popular among gay people before it became a hit. And now like when I think about the single that is the most queer from Future Nostalgia, I'd say Physical. And Physical was by far the least big hit. But I like it the best. I think it's the best song on that album.
Better song. Much better song.
But also there's something about it that still feels chosen. Right? Like, oh no, we know that this one's the best one. That's also why, like, Into You by Ariana Grande is the most popular song among gay people on Dangerous Woman. To most people, it's a song on Dangerous Woman. And that kind of, like, selection, I think, is a really important part of this whole process. Or, like, even among smaller artists, you know, you're, like, classic flop stars saying, like, I know that Carly Rae Jepsen is still good. Is like, great. I don't think there's much queerness other than the song Your Type in Carly Rae Jepsen's music. And I think she's smart to not have leaned into that, actually, as her music has gone on. But there is something gay about a Carly Rae Jepsen concert. I was at one. It was all gay people. Like, you go to that concert, number one, to listen to Carly, but number two, to be in that space.
And to have chosen to be in that space.
Like, yeah, to know that everyone among you is in that space and they're all queer. I also think it's why, like, on Clarity by Kim Petras, on Clarity by Kim Petras, Shine In is the song I'm least likely to hear. And that's the song that's supposed to be inspirational. It's also the worst song, but I think those things go hand in hand, right? Like, a lot of the time, this, like, I am doing an inspirational thing to the queer community thing, it comes off cringy because nobody
asked for it.
Nobody asked for it. It's not fun and it's not. It's only inspirational, really, if you haven't done much work to accept yourself, I think. I think once you move beyond, like, coming out, like, those songs don't do as much for you because they aren't reminding you of reveling with your friends, which is the real memory that gets attached to those things. They're just speaking at you and saying that you're accepted.
Can we talk a little bit about how this kind of, like, choice matrix functions with someone, or functioned, I should say, with someone like Gaga, who obviously functions in this world that we're talking about, but also became incredibly popular very, very quickly early in her career, and I think did a pretty good job navigating relevance in both spaces simultaneously. But how did it function in real time as far as like certain songs working in the mainstream and certain songs working as gay anthems? What was the ongoing discourse as that was happening?
If we're talking about Gaga's Imperial era, I think that there's something. She was really good at always somehow appearing like an underdog, even when she was the biggest pop star in the world, she was the most exciting, she was the biggest thing in the world, but there was an amount that you constantly felt like you had to defend her because she was weird, because she pushed people's buttons, and because she was asking something of the larger pop audience that queer people were happy to give to her. Like, when you put out that Paparazzi music video, when you put out Telephone, you're asking something of your audience if they want to fully understand it, right? Like, you're asking them to understand camp. A lot of that time, that just got interpreted as crazy, but I do think there's intention behind it, and there always was. And so I think the fact that you always had to defend Gaga because she was so out there, because she felt like an art school freak, made her able to navigate that for a while.
That's interesting. The notion that Gaga was in need, even though she was, in fact, one of the five biggest pop stars of those years.
I think for 2 years, she was probably the biggest.
By number one, yeah. But even though that was happening, there was some sense that she was either misunderstood, understood, misapprehended, whatever. And so that allowed her to have this kind of like simultaneous positionality of on top of the world, but also knocking from the outside, looking in.
That was her game plan, and it worked very well for a while. I think then what happened to her, and the reason her imperial era maybe didn't last as long as people expected it to, is that that is unsustainable. You can't be the underdog and the biggest pop star in the world for that long.
This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Part of the reason that Kylie song like this can be embraced and Kylie can be intermittently make the gay anthem of the summer is because she's not a world-killing pop star in this country. And so there is this sense of choice, embrace, pulling her into the narrative, whether or not she's choosing to be in the narrative.
Exactly.
Do you think any other contemporary pop stars, and by contemporary, maybe Gaga and post-Gaga, is there anybody else successfully navigating this world, either in terms of being inside and outside? You mentioned Ariana as a potential option, or even just someone who's only purely outside, hasn't cracked.
Oh, there's 8 million outside. I think there's more outside now than there ever has been, partly because pop music doesn't play as well on the charts. So yeah, pure pop doesn't play as well on the charts. So anyone who wants to make pure pop or a version or a take or a commentary on pure pop is going to be on the outside looking in. And so they're always going to be the underdog. And so they're always going to be chosen. Charlie is incredible at this. She's really remarkable at making herself into an object to be supported. Okay, that sounds bad. Charlie was in my top 5 artists of the year last year. I want to support her. I'm among the crew.
We get more emails about Charlie XCX than absolutely any other.
I think
other
you want to do a Charlie cast, John? I'm ready. I'll bring a paper, a thesis paper on
it. At some point, I will say it now just so everybody can hear this. At some point, we will do a Charlie cast. I cannot say when, but we will do a Charlie cast, and everybody can come to drag me on Charlie cast day.
Yeah, I'd love to have this conversation. I think I DM'd you about
it. Get online,
at one point.
Jason. Get on. Yes, I will make myself available to be dragged on Charlie cast.
But that goes for Rena. That goes for previous Kim. That goes for even like Caroline, who's not Caroline Polachek, who's not doing pure pop, but she like is playing within that space. I mean, it's all new Robin. Like all of these people are taking from Robin.
Rena pre-Elton, essentially, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Rena doesn't maybe have the ferocity of support that she used to. Lorde doesn't have this ferocity of the support that she used to. And it's because their albums didn't, their most recent albums didn't really work. And so I do feel like the other thing is to mention is it's not just image. You do have to produce something musically that is connecting with people. And I think that goes back to a lot with hooks, right? Like you want to dance to it, but I also think it goes back to originality, right? There's something that you do that feels like there's something artistic. You have to do something artistically that feels like it should be supported.
And how much of that is lyrical content? How much of that is, like, one of the things Rena did, I think, so well was toy with discarded genre in a way that maybe it was camp, maybe it wasn't, maybe it was ironic, maybe it wasn't, but sorted through things that talk about people who are undervalued or sounds that are undervalued and making choices to embrace and amplify. That's what that album did so well in my mind, and also maybe what the subsequent album did not do as well. The choices didn't feel quite as pointed on the subsequent album to me. But
yeah, 100%.
How much of it in your mind is about lyrics? How much of it is about sound choices? How much of it is about overt versus subliminal outreach?
I think sonic choices are a really big part of it. I think that generally, when I say sonic choices, I think it's about having a presence, right? Like you want to have some individual that you can get behind and support. I think the reason that Charlie did so well on like PC music, for example, is that she lended a presence and a pop star quality to this kind of music that was anonymous before. And so while PC music was always queer, I think that the reason that Charlie works particularly well in that context is that she was able to take what was there and give it a figurehead and a voice on the songs. So I think that being able to interpret those sonic capabilities into like a strong, normally female, unless you're talking about Troye Sivan, presence on the song is what makes it most responded to.
Okay, so just a brief detour. I want to say, when would Troye Sivan have done his first big tour in New York?
I mean, Blue Neighborhood, which is probably 2014.
Yeah, I was going to say like mid-2010s, maybe.
When did Blue Neighborhood came out in 2015? I think that's probably his first big tour.
Okay, so 15, 16, something in that area. Okay, so I remember this was the time where we used to review live shows constantly, and then we kind of like started to back away from them. This was like in the era where we were like backing away. And I remember I went to that show, Karen and I, we're talking about Troye Sivan. What do? Should we cover? Should we cover the show? And we're like, we probably shouldn't like review the concert, but like we should like check in on it and see what's going on. That Troye Sivan concert, I'm 95% sure it was at Webster Hall, was one of the, I haven't had this many moments as a pop critic, but it was one of the moments that I had where I walked out of the room being like, that motherfucker is a star. Holy shit. Like the 1,000 people in this room are going to remember this, seeing this. Unbelievable. The energy, the chemistry, every intangible aspect of a concert that like when you try to explain it to somebody, it never quite translates because you're literally just talking about some sensation that you felt inside of you. But that Troye Sivan show, mind blowing. Genuinely, like the energy, the level of intensity, out of control. And I remember very vividly calling Karen the next day and just being like, we got to get like this. Like, we have to get on this. This is a real fucking thing. Absolutely.
He's a charisma font. Yeah.
Huge. And now on the Idol. The Weeknd, Abel, please listen to that Troye Sivan album. It goes. Also, like dirty Troye Sivan, like later Troye Sivan, like dirtier Troye Sivan. A lot in common with The Weeknd, probably much more in common than you might think.
He's also like a pretty strong actor. 3 months was pretty solid. That movie was pretty solid.
Sorry, just a Troye Sivan detour.
Might as well.
Maybe let's close out. We touched on Madonna briefly. One thing that's interesting about Madonna is obviously like Madonna was navigating a lot of this 20, 30 years ago before the level of discourse about things like this was as hypertrophied as it is now.
Yeah, and also before that market was looked at as like something to actively be catered to.
Right. Can you tell me in retrospect, how does that Madonna stuff feel to you? I'm old enough to have lived through it. You see it in the rear view. God bless.
Yeah, right.
But like, how does that stuff feel in retrospect? Does it feel pandering? Does it feel a successful courting? How does it look in hindsight to you?
I don't think Express Yourself has that much tension to it. I think it was just a song written for gay people that most people liked. I think it's an okay song. It's not like top 10 Madonna for me, but it's there, it's in the Madonna canon, whatever. And it set the mode for that kind of like, I'm writing a song to my queer people, but I'm not going to actively say queer mode, which many people have done now.
Yes. Reflective of the day and also an ongoing.
Yeah. It's like a dance pop version of True Colors. I think the more, and we brought this up last time I was here, thank God, the thing with more tension is Vogue, right? Like that's more interesting, that's more ripe. And the tension to me is not like catering to embarrassingly on that song or just like making great pop music. It's between cultural appropriation and making great pop music. Ultimately, I know it's great pop music. And whether or not you think it's cultural appropriation comes down, I think, a lot to personal opinions because people who were involved in the ballroom scene were involved in that song, right? Like that, or were involved in the music video, were involved in the tour. I mean, you see it on Truth or Dare. Like, it's deeply in Truth or Dare to the point where that was like releasing Truth or Dare and humanizing those dancers could be perceived as a form of activism. Madonna in retrospect, could be read a lot of different ways. But the fact that in a lot of ways she was the first one to set this mode means that I look on it kinder than I look on it kindly. Like I don't think someone had said this is how you become a gay icon yet.
Like all the modes that I think we have been talking about throughout this conversation were not in play in Madonna's 80s work. They only come into play later.
Yeah, 100%. I think a lot of pop stars later in life realize how big the queer community is for them because it's like, oh, when I have ups and downs, gay men don't really care. Like when you're on your down, that's when gay men are the most, I have to defend you. Like you will hear gay men defend art pop. And it will be a difficult conversation to make it through. They're annoying. I love them. Love you guys. It's annoying. But those are the things that they live for. I mean, with Kylie, right? Like the most popular album to a lot of people the most defendable album in Kylie's discography is Impossible Princess to a lot of gay people, which is her My December. It's like when she said, I'm going to be personal, and then the public rejected it. And now you have people who are go crazy for that album. Like that's how it works. And I think a lot of pop stars later in life realize that.
To circle back to the conversation we had the last time you were on about the Beyoncé album, like in how does Beyoncé function? Is obviously one of the sort of tenets of Beyoncé's public presentation is you don't see, there's not an up and down as much.
Right.
Like these kind of like moments of, oh, people are rejecting this Gaga album. Like people don't reject Beyoncé albums like that. So how does that interface with queer support play with someone like Beyoncé, who historically has not had moments where people have tried to take her down for an off-brand album or whatever?
I think that the gay community, particularly the Black gay community, is uniquely passionate about her. Like she will... Those are the people who she does homecoming one weekend and the next time she does homecoming, someone is in an exact replica of her outfit, right? Like she knows that. And I think that that is flattering and also interesting to her as a form of fan relation. She's had tributes to her at like the GLAAD Awards where, Shangela performed for her. Like that kind of thing is something she's aware of. I don't think she needs it. But I do think it is flattering. And I also think this album was her, like, Renaissance was her, like, looking around potential spaces that it would make sense for her and realizing that at that point, ballroom hadn't been mined fully. So that was what it was. And so I think it was an artistic choice. I think it was a choice for the fans. But the closest she ever comes to doing those, and this is for you, gay people, songs directly, is, like, Cozy.
Right, which is what I was getting at with Renaissance, which is in theory, that's what the album is coded as or how it's framed as. But on a micro level, it's really only in specific moments with like little samples or particular lyrical references. It's not, there's no true colors.
Right. And now on TikTok, I see people taking videos of like robots moving in a certain way or anything like moving in a herky jerky way and captioning it like, this is so Beyoncé Renaissance coded. And I'm like, do you mean ballroom?
Wow.
Like, do you mean ballroom? It's a little like, oh, yeah, okay, if you don't know that, this album still goes for you. Like, happy for you. If you don't know that reference at all, this album still works for you. And so I think that that's worth noting in Renaissance. Like, it is a wink, but it's a wink. It is still subtext to some people.
Jason, this conversation has been extremely padam. Is how I
oh,
would
so
think.
Padam. I would even go as far as to say it was padam padam, double.
No lies were told. Thank you for being here. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Get in the Discord, get in the Facebook, tinyurl.com/podcast Facebook, podcast Discord. Podcast Deluxe is on YouTube, which still baffles me and blows my mind. Me and Joe, once a week, sitting in our cool chairs. That's youtube.com/NYTimes. We're on there. You can just find it or type Popcast Deluxe. The shirts and the stickers are at itsthepopcast.myshopify.com. Get involved. Jason's about to get his. Our producer, as always, is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week. Jason, why don't we go out with like an underappreciated Kylie from this Kylie album you just mentioned, which on God, I have not listened to.
Oh, can I go from outside music? Because we already played Supernova, so that would be my reference. Let's go with Wow. I like Wow a lot.
That sounds phenomenal. This is Wow. This is Kylie. That's Jason. I'm John. We're back next week.